Okay, we are recording, so whenever you're ready, Dr. Mittman.
Do that. Although I'm back. All right. Good morning, everyone. The December 10th, 2020 meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education Finance Committee is called to order at 10 a.m. The audio recording of this meeting, or rather the September 22nd, 2020 meeting, has been posted on our website. As a reminder, the State Board's policy for the recording of minutes is to audio record all meetings and to post to the website. Mr. LaMountain, can you confirm the audio minutes of the September 22nd, 2020 Finance Committee meetings? Meeting has been posted and are audible.
Dr. Mittman, yes, I can confirm that they are on our website.
Way to go. All right. Rachel, could you please call the roll for the board and the staff?
Yes, sir. Mr. Dick Lupke?
Here.
Mr. Glenn Tharp?
I'm not on the Finance Committee, but I'm here.
Okay, I saw you were here, but I thought I'd...
I'm here because I'm on the agenda, so...
Oh, I should have seen that and recognized it.
Special guest appearance.
Well, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Rachel.
And Dr. Mittman?
Present.
Mr. Kevin LaMountain?
I'm here.
Mr. Keith Blanchard?
Present.
Ms. Terry Stanfill?
Present.
Wonderful. And myself, Rachel Kearse, I am also present.
And did you call Mr. Wallace?
Yeah.
Mr. Scott Wallace, you are correct. I have that on my little list.
I'm here.
Good morning.
Let's see. Well, let's get started. And I believe our first... Schools Arizona Heart Foundation. We have Mr. Sean Kerrigan and Ms. Paula Banahan here, and we will be discussing and taking action on the financial status and license renewal. Mr. LaMountain, would you provide us a brief introduction?
May I interject?
You may.
On the meeting minutes, did we do a motion and second?
No, we did not.
Could we please do that?
That? I wanted to just test Ms. Kearse. So we get a motion to accept the audio minutes of the September 22nd, 2020 meeting of the Finance Committee.
This is Scott Wallace. I make that motion.
And a second?
It's just you and I think.
No, I think Dick is here.
Dick is on.
I had to get off mute. I second the motion.
Great. Okay.
And by roll call vote.
Okay.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dick Lupke?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Back to our Arizona Art Foundation. And Mr. LaMountain, can you provide us with a brief introduction, please?
Yes, Dr. Mittman. The Arizona Heart Foundation School of Cardiac Ultrasound has been licensed by the board since 12/10 of 1986, previously as Arizona Heart Foundation. It's on quarterly reporting until December of 2017. During review of the 2020 license renewal, the financial statements continued to show a net loss, and accordingly, the renewal was referred to the state board. Today, outside of just reviewing their financials, they are also seeking their license renewal at this time as well.
Great. Ms. Banahan or Mr. Kerrigan, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yeah, Paul, are you on? Okay. Good morning.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you are.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Paul. You want to give the opening statement?
Sure. While we know it looks not so good these days, we have had to spend a great deal more expense to get through COVID. We don't need to go through all the laborious reasons why, but a good probably $20,000 a month for COVID expenses and extra people and distancing and outside classrooms. But I think the most important thing to report to the board is we have now been able to secure the ability to launch an evening class, which I'm going to let Sean explain the financial impact. But we're going to be launching an evening class starting this January next month. And we're going to start with a fewer number of students because, again, our biggest challenge has been clinical sites. So the effort for that, I think, will be financially seen with Sean's report. But what I would like to add is the biggest thing that I'm going to be focusing on in the near future is how to actually license our own lab. I know that COVID is probably going to be a little bit easier to deal with come this summer and fall. But until then, we're still facing some fallout of clinical sites. Surprisingly, we do not have a lack of students applying for the program. So that's the good news. And that's the reason that we do have the ability to launch an evening class is because we have a waiting list for the cardiac program. So, Sean, if you want to mention how the evening class will impact the financials, I'll let you take over.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I would agree that we're still running at a loss. But if you look at the financial template report that we submitted for this entire next fiscal year, you know, you can see starting in the third quarter, you know, from the second quarter to the third quarter, we're going to be $20,000 profitable, the bottom line. And then from the third quarter to the fourth quarter, we're going to pick up another $30,000 of profit. So once we get this night program, even adding 10 students, because you can also see on the template that, you know, we have 35 students, but we need 38 to be break even. So we're almost there. It's just we're always just falling just a couple students short, which is stopping us from reaching that number of bottom line profitability. But with the start of the night program, and then we have, as Paula mentioned, we have a vascular start in January, where I budgeted 18 students. It looks like we're going to have 20. So I think it's looking good. It's just even the full fiscal year is still going to show red numbers, but as you continue into 2021, those are eventually going to turn black.
Okay. Well, thanks. Questions from the board, Mr. Lupe or Mr. Wallace?
This is Scott Wallace. I'm looking at your June 2020 just summary financial information. Net assets are negative. How are you going to finance the operation going forward?
Through increased student enrollment is really how we get there.
Well, I understand that, but you said that you're always short on your goals on student enrollment.
Well, we have been, yes, but going forward, I think we're going to hit it and exceed it, which will get us a little bit of extra that we need to remain profitable. We may also look at expenses, reducing some payroll and other items in the meantime to try and, stem some of the loss if a student or two doesn't make it into where we need it.
We had just mentioned that this vascular class, sir, is the first class that we're actually meeting the goal of 20 students. We don't need nor want to go above the 20 students because that really takes away from the quality of the program. So our goal has always been for 20 students, and we're now just being able to reach that, plus exceed the 20 in the cardiac, which is why we're adding the additional evening class.
Dr. Medvin, I have a couple questions.
Go right ahead, Mr. Lubke.
Either Mr. Kerrigan or Mr. Manahan, can you give the committee a little idea of where you project your financial statements will be at the end of this year? what amount are you projecting to lose?
We're projecting at the, you know, at the bottom line of $50,000 loss at the end of this fiscal year in June of 2021.
Okay. That doesn't sound so bad.
It's gonna get better.
I'm a little curious if you received or applied for any of the government payroll protection money.
Yes, we did. We applied for $109,000, which is sitting on our balance sheet at the moment, but we just filed the paperwork to have that waived and forgiven, and we were well under the number to get that done. So we are estimating that the $109,000 will be forgiven, and as far as I know, it shows up as some other income on the P&L, you know, at the bottom of your P&L. So that was good news as well.
All right. And lastly, could you give the committee just an estimate of how much cash you have on hand?
At the moment, about $350,000.
All right, very good. Dr. Mevin, that's the only questions I have.
Okay, well, thank you. So a couple of questions. Mr. Kerrigan, for the 50%, the $50,000 anticipated loss in this fiscal year, does that include the PPP loan forgiveness? So in other words, are you counting roughly $109,000 of revenue from the PPP loan?
I am not, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so in other words, then you would probably be, you know, $50,000 or so in the black when you.
There you go. Yes.
Okay. But, you know, when you were talking about expenses and, you know, the foundation has lost, you know, money the last several years, and you've kind of burned through a good chunk of the bequest, you know, that really, you know, fortified the school's finances back after Dr. Dietrich died. And I'm just wondering, you know, what are the plans, either from an expense standpoint or, you know, other measures, you know, to start to build that back up.
If I could speak to that, Sean, for just a second. One of the things that we're really looking forward to is the ability to move from our current space. We are in a, quote, medical office building. Our TIs had to be medical office quality, which we don't require. So it's a very, very expensive place for us to reside. And it was, I have to say, it was kind of a requirement of Dr. Dietrich when we went through leasing the building and then convincing him to sell the building. And he said, we have to stay here. So we have found space that actually doubles our current square footage for the exact same amount of money. So with that, we would be able to actually offer more classes. We would be in a better position to have our lab become licensed. Because one of the things that we cannot do at our current facility is license this lab because it's a shared space with a classroom. So in going through all the endeavors to try to figure out how we grow, it really becomes imperative that we leave our current space.
Okay. And so your current rent is about $155,000. And so that doesn't trim any of your expenses, but you're expecting that you would be able to increase your revenue with a different location.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Another, you know, question that I have is the foundation is a nonprofit, right? Not for profit. You have a governing board. I can't remember where I saw the directors or trustees that you have, right?
Yes.
So do you receive, and I can't remember seeing this on the income statement, charitable contributions for you know, for the foundation?
Sharon, do you want to answer?
Yeah, I mean, we do. They have gone down over the years, and we have looked to the board to try and help us in our fundraising efforts and building reserves for the foundation. Unfortunately, I just don't think we've found the right mix yet. We have probably the majority of our board coming up to their 2-year term. So, yeah, and then this year we were really hit from, you know, from the COVID. We were, you know, pretty close to getting a $300,000 appropriation from the state budget to do remote ultrasounds and go out to the remote areas. And of course, right as end of February, beginning of March, that got waylaid due to COVID. So we've been working with the state board and the state representatives to try and do initiatives. So I think we're hoping to get that back on track, you know, as we get into a better situation in 2021.
Okay. And I bring that up just because, you know, most people underestimate the impact that a governing board can have, both good and bad. And I don't mean to infer that you have either a good or a bad governing board. But one of the, you know, main responsibilities of a governing board is to help support the organization through their charitable contributions. And so I would look at, you know, whatever you're going to invest, you know, there, you know, especially with an organization with the legacy that you have, you know, I would suspect that there are people who, you know, hold it in a very, not just high regard, but also have, you know, significant attachments to it. And, you know, one place that you may look is an organization called Board Source, or I don't know if you've done anything through the Virginia Piper Charitable Trust, but they have a board development program as well.
Yes, we have, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Such as it is. Any other questions, Mr. Lupke or Mr. Wallace? If not, can I get a motion by stipulated agreement to approve the regular vocational program license renewal with the stipulation that the surety bond of $89,256 be maintained, continue quarterly reporting, and to provide electronic copies of student records on a quarterly basis?
So moved.
I'll second that.
And seconded by Mr. Wallace. Ms. Banahan and Mr. Kerrigan, do you agree to the stipulation?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
All right. Ms. Pierce, call the roll.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Yes, aye.
Dick Lupke?
Aye.
And Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
And the ayes have it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Best of everything to you guys, and have a safe holidays and a good start to the next year.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, and the same to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, next up, Brookline College, representing the institution. I saw Glenn Tharp, and I'm not sure if Mr.
Yes.
and Mr. Harbison are here as well.
Yes, hello.
Well, good. Mr. LaMountain, do you want to give us a brief introduction?
Sure, Dr. Mibben, the and committee members. Before the board right today is a discussion and action on the 2021 regular vocational program, the degree granting license for Brookline College. If you recall, Brookline has recently gone through a change of ownership that was approved in our prior meeting. And in addition to the information that you have in your packet, a letter was added a couple of days ago, requesting, with Brookline requesting that they be removed from
the quarterly reporting. All of that information is in your board packet.
That's so? Okay. Mr. Tharp or your colleagues, would you like to make an opening statement?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for letting me be here today to present Brookline College. On the call with us is Shannon Stern, who is the Brookline CFO, and then George Harbison, who's the CFO for Unitech Learning, which now owns the Brookline family of schools. So I come before you today seeking relicensure and also seeking removal from financial reporting. I've started with Brookline College 2.5 years ago, and they, since I've been with them, they've been solidly profitable, as you can see from our audited financials, which were supplied to the board. We're very strong and robust campuses, that are making money. The schools are all performing well. We have no accreditation issues. We went through a surprise accreditation visit this year, and that all went very well with only one finding, which we corrected quickly. We went through CCNE for the nursing with a re-grant of the maximum allowable. So all that's good. And as you can see from our net income and our EBITDA, we've been, performing very well financially. Us being added to the Unitech family will only help us and give us more resources. There are a family of schools throughout the West, so that has been a very positive for our school. So with that brief statement, I'm certainly, my colleagues are open for any questions you may have of us.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Mr. Wallace or Mr. Lukey, do you have any questions?
I do. So, Mr. Tharp, nice job there in keeping things afloat.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Your balance sheet is only showing $779 million of assets. So,
yeah. We hope to get to 80.
Okay. All right. could you give the committee just an idea of how you've navigated through the 2020 what effect it's had on the original budget and where you expect to finish the year?
For the exact numbers, I would have to turn that over to my colleagues. But I would just tell you, through this COVID year has been challenging for all of us in many ways. But I would say I'm super proud of what we've done. We've been able to seamlessly move, over 2,000 students in the Brookline family on to online or virtual or simulated. We're doing some simulated clinicals while the clinical sites are at a reduced fashion. We have a robust simulation for nursing and virtual reality for nursing, and that's all gone. So it hasn't had a negative effect on us so much as starts seem to have remained there, remained up. The last couple months, we're seeing a little bit of fall off just from, I think, COVID fatigue and things that people are doing. We're also, all staff is working remotely except for our receptionist, and I come in about 2 to 3 times a week. So,
great. Very good. Glenn, did you and the team, did you apply for your PPP loan?
We never took that, no.
Oh, okay.
And I'll just have George and Shannon, can you please confirm that? I know that we were going to and we didn't, but I'll turn it over to Shannon.
We did. So when COVID first started, we were unsure as to the effect it would have on the institution. So we applied for the loan and drew it and actually returned it within that deadline to return it without any penalty.
I see. Very good. All right, I'll turn it back over to Dr. Medman.
Thank you. Mr. Wells, do you have a question?
No, I think the package and the presentation was very well presented. I don't have any further questions.
Okay, great. And do we have, can you give us a heads up, Mr. Tharp, about plans for the new year? You said that everyone is pretty much working remotely, students being taught virtually, et cetera. What are your plans for the coming quarter, trimester, or that you're coming up?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question, members of the committee. I think there's still a lot of unknowns about this COVID. We are not encouraged by the rapid rise in cases and that we've seen at in the Phoenix area and the Tucson area. What our plan is to go through this term to December 28th, and then at the first year we'll reevaluate based on the available information that we have at that time as far as how the COVID is progressing, how the vaccines are getting distributed, and so on. So our goal is, of course, to return to campus, for those students and the labs and such. We were doing labs up until about a month ago in simulations on campus in small groups, but we had, three or four students and a staff member come up with COVID. So we took the path which we thought was safest for our students and our staff, and we backed off, and we will reevaluate after the first of the year. That willing, we'll come back to school for those ground things. I think, one of the things, Mr. Chairman, that I think all of us as school operators have, also we need to take the best practices, because we've really developed some really good practices also in this virtual world and stuff, mm-hmm. and we need to leverage those that will be best for our business, So do didactic students really need to come to class for every class? Probably not is the answer. You'll probably do that via the virtual format. So I know that's a little squishy, but the bottom line is I don't know, but we'll reevaluate come the first of the year. And as safety permits, we'll start returning.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. So with respect to licensure and the request from Brookline, I'm inclined, based on the last 2 years of encounters and reports that we've had, to remove the stipulation. Can I confirm, or Mr. Lamont, can you confirm that the school has met the criteria? Because I know that we have a criteria for 2 years of audited financials, and I'm not sure if that if there's anything else.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman, and members of the committee. It is my understanding that yes, they have made they have fulfilled that requirement. I would reach out really quick, and Terry, Ms. Stanfield, do you have any other comments regarding that?
In my review, I believe that they have.
Okay. Then. Well, why don't we make a motion? And so I'd like to entertain a motion that by stipulated agreement, approve the regular vocational program and degree granting license renewal. And then are we removing the quarterly reporting and electronic records, or are the quarterly reporting and the surety bond?
Well, I'm seeking removal, yes.
Right, we would seek the removal of the quarterly reporting, the virtual, the records. That would be part of it, and the stipulation would still be to maintain the bond, although that is entirely up to you.
Okay.
We of course would, this is Mr. Harbison, we would very much like to have the bond requirement removed.
Okay. So, Mr. Lupke and Mr. Wallace, I think the purpose here is, number one is to ensure that the students who attend Brookline are protected from, unforeseen and unfortunate, consequences of a school closure. It also is to protect the strike fund for the state. I think in this case, the fact that, really for the last 2 years, the school has performed better than it had for all the years that I've been serving on this board, and the resources of the parent company seem to be sufficient to carry them through. And of course, if they were to post, a loss and things go in the other directions, we could always, reinstitute the stipulations. So what do the two of you think?
Well, I would agree with you, Dr. Mippen. It looks like they're trending very positively over the past 2 years. No reason to believe that it's going to change. They'll be up for renewal 1 year from this month, I suppose, and we'll have evidence as to whether or not that was a good decision. But I would not stand in the way of removing all the stipulations.
Thanks.
I concur. I agree with the financial strength that one stipulation is not necessary.
Okay. Well, and I would just say, that the school's turnaround under your leadership, Mr. Tharp, has been rather significant, which I think is as important as the overall financial picture. So can I get a motion to approve regular vocational program and degree granting license renewal, period?
I make that motion.
And I'll second.
Mr. Lukey, Ms. Kearse, call the roll for the vote.
Okay, Mr. Dick Lukey.
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
And Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. Nice have it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, we really appreciate your time this morning, and I will see you both this afternoon. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Next up, Carrington College. This is the third of our license renewal, and so... Mr. LaMountain, can you give us a brief introduction?
Dr. Mivin and committee members, yes. Before the board is a discussion and action on the vocational program and degree granting license for Carrington College. There are four locations that they have in the state of Arizona. They have been on financial reporting for a few years now, ever since the change of ownership that happened back in 2019. Representing the institution are both Robert Hendrickson and Mario Noble.
Okay. Mr. Hendrickson or Nova, would you care to make an opening statement?
Yes, please. This is Robert Hendrickson. So Carrington College and its parent company, San Joaquin Valley College, Inc., have done well to navigate the challenges of 2020 by relying on prior investment in the distance education infrastructure. It's allowed our colleges to continue to advance students and their progress towards their credentials. We've been able to reduce some of our operating expenses and shift what had previously been on-ground operations online. The college has been the beneficiary of about $1.9 million in CARES Act Higher Education Emergency Relief Funds, which have allowed us to expand our ability to simulate certain previously on-ground exclusive activities into a virtual environment, which has allowed us to continue to move our students forward. For this year to date, we've seen profitability in three out of our four locations. And I have full explanation for the fourth location, which is referred to as Phoenix East on the license. We've been doing a targeted teach down of the Phoenix East location. You'll note that it's at the same physical location as our Phoenix North campus, and which began in September of 2019. So whereas previously new students were entering into Phoenix East, they were then routed to the same programs offered at the Phoenix North campus designation. We continue to teach down Phoenix East with the last student scheduled to graduate for December of 2021. The colleges have a significant and parent company have significant investment in their campuses in the state of Arizona. We opened a satellite facility close to the Phoenix North location and have rolled out seven new programs moving into a new field with trades education, which have been migrated from our San Joaquin Valley College brand, where they had been successful or have been successful in the Southern California region, as well as the introduction of a surgical technology program also located at the Phoenix North location. And we provide this information along with our financial information for a renewal of our licenses.
Great, thanks. Fellow board members, any questions for Carrington College and the folks at San Joaquin?
This is Mr. Liebke. Mr. Hendrickson, can you give us an idea of what you're projecting in terms of profitability for year end?
For the whole of the organization, it was just our finance department was specific in giving us information for the whole operation. We're looking in the $5 million range.
Okay. I think that's up from the $1.3 million of the previous year. Do you want to speak a little bit more about, is the one campus that's not profitable, is that the one you're closing in the East Phoenix area?
Yes, that's correct. If you look at the address, they're both located at the Dunlap. There was what was previously a tri-location of schools owned by Adtalem Global Education. There's Carrington College, Chamberlain College of Nursing, and DeVry are all in the same one facility. We are consolidating one of the locations, which is located at Suite 100, and the other that's located at Suite 103. The reasoning for the maintenance of the two campuses is partially due to the federal rules regarding closed school action, and then the other is that this campus that had previously been located at another location on the other side of the I-17 is actually the main campus, so we couldn't just fold the one into the other.
All right, very good.
Mr. Wallace, any questions?
Did we get any interim financial statements or information for 2020?
We operate with a fiscal year, a calendar fiscal year. So the last full fiscal year audit financials would have been from calendar year 2019.
I did see that. And how have you done for the first 6 months of this year or 9 months, whatever, where you have available?
Sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, how in terms of your financial performance on an interim basis for 2020, whether it be June or September quarter cutoffs, can you enlighten me, please?
Is there a way you can restate the question? Sorry, I'm having trouble.
I think if I could, the question is, I'm not sure, did we, and I don't have the documents in front of me, I just have the summary that I wrote. Do we have the September 30th in-house financial statements already? Is that part of the packet?
The title of the new financial report was provided for each of the four campuses, and then the balance sheet information reflected the whole of San Joaquin Valley College, Inc.
Okay. So, yeah, I think, Mr. Wallace, I think the question that Mr. Liebke asked about where they intend to end up would have been built on where things stand as of September 30th. I don't have the packet in front of me. Mr. LaMountain, can you confirm that we have the worksheet with the first three quarters of
yes.
Unaudited financial?
I can confirm. In your file, there is a zip folder for Q3 2020 financial reports for Carrington.
Okay. Well, good. Well, Mr. Wallace and I are on the same page because I couldn't open that either. So,
okay. Is that the one that required a password or something?
But whatever required, I was unable to figure it out.
Yeah. Okay.
Either. And so, I don't know if either Mr. LaMountain or Mr. Hendrickson, could you just give us a quick snapshot of where you know, what your income statement looked like at the end of quarter three, and maybe, I don't know, maybe any other questions that Mr. Wiles might have?
Sure. For the four campuses, our net income is about $100,000. Net income is about $100,000, accounting for the loss at the Phoenix East campus. There's been a balance between the reduction in income at Phoenix East and an increase in the total revenues for Phoenix North. I'm sorry, I misspoke. For the quarter, it was about $100,000. For the year, it is about $500,000. I can give you an exact figure. Give me 1 second. Yeah, about $562,000 in net income for the four Phoenix campuses for calendar year 2020.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And could you just give me like a quick synopsis of, you know, you referenced investments based on the $1.9 million from the CARES Act. Just give us a quick snapshot as to what you guys did with that and how it impacted the schools.
Sure. So one major expense was the purchase of a nursing simulation system from a vendor called ATI. This has allowed us to provide certain clinical exercises via distance education, whereas previously students were required to come on campus. We have nursing at three of the four locations, so, and represents one of our larger sources of revenue. In addition to that, we've been putting in funds for facilities improvements with regard to our air filtration system, distribution of personal protective equipment. There was investment made in the online infrastructure, both in terms of the expansion of our ability for students to be trained on the learning management system Canvas, faculty investment in training also in that. So previously student instructors who were primarily or exclusively on ground, teaching them to teach in an online environment. We've also been able to claim some amount of facilities expenses for unused space. So basically offsetting some of the facilities costs that have remained vacant at times.
Okay. Well, thank you. And the and was some of this PPP funds, so it was payroll protection as well, or was it all the I can't remember the loan that would have that you could invest?
We did not participate in the Payroll Protection Act. So this is the institutional portion of the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund. So then we had another $1.9 million to distribute across students in the Carrington OPEID based with Phoenix North as the main campus, which also includes locations in Nevada and New Mexico.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, how did you do that? Did you split it evenly? Did you have some kind of needs-based approach?
Yes. So program directors were required to put together packages for requests, and then requests were balanced based upon the urgency of the need. So would it result in students being placed in a leave of absence by inability to complete specific coursework, as well as the total impact? So how many total students would be the beneficiaries of the purchase of the equipment? And we still have some residual funds remaining for that OPEID as we continue now for the end of this calendar year. So as the students progress, what would we benefit from having that allows students to operate in a social distance environment or virtually?
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you. I sometimes ask some of these questions just because I know there's a lot of schools on the call. And so if there are some best practices, this looks like a good use. And the simulation company you said again was EDI?
ATI.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. And I'd like to, you know, this is another school that has been on quarterly reporting and has had a stipulated agreement. I think since the change of ownership with San Joaquin and U.S. Educational Holdings, you know, it's been much, you know, much stronger finances and, you know, no decrease in the quality of the educational experience. We've seen positive net income for the last 3 years. And so I would like to entertain a motion to approve the 2021 regular and vocational and degree granting licenses for Carrington College with this. No, and that, for some reason I thought that, that Carrington was eligible to be removed from quarterly reporting. Is that correct, Mr. LaMountain?
Yes, Dr. Mivin and members of the committee, they are eligible to be removed.
Okay. And I think that that was also a staff recommendation. I take notes on everything, and I'm reading from my notes, which may have been inaccurate. I just want to confirm.
No, you are accurate.
Okay. So then the proposed action would be to approve the 2021 regular vocational and degree granting licenses for Carrington College, period. Can I get a motion and a second, and then Mr. Lukey and Mr. Wallace, you guys can weigh in on whether you want to proceed that way.
I make the motion.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay, great. Do you guys have any concerns about renewing the license without any of the stipulations?
Well, I would say they're trending, but from where they started off after the consolidation of having, you know, San Joaquin took over from DeVry the Carrington brand, and collectively, you know, their margins aren't great on $229 million of revenue. Their bottom line is, at the end of 2019, only $1 million and change. So, but according to Mr. Hendrickson, he gave testimony today that they're projecting to be at $5 million. So it's trending positively, but it certainly would be one that I would expect the staff to keep an eye on.
Okay. So are you comfortable with removing the stipulations, or do you want to keep them on for another? I mean, we can keep them on for another year.
I'm barely comfortable removing the stipulations, but I would vote in favor of removing them.
Okay. How about you, Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, didn't staff indicate that they wanted the surety bonds to be maintained? Albeit, you know, we've seen some strong financial statements.
Mr. Wallace, Dr. Mivin, Mr. Wallace, the recommendation from staff would be to continue the surety bond, which is currently at $655,873.
Okay, and just remove quarterly reporting.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I apologize for a misunderstanding or misreading my notes, and so. Mr. Lukey, do you want to make a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Assuming that we're still friends on friendly terms.
Yeah, I would amend my motion to read that we approve renewal of their license and that we maintain that they would agree to maintaining the surety bond, but that we would take quarterly reporting.
Okay. Mr. Wallace, would you second that?
I second that.
Okay. Mr. Hendrickson and Novo, do you agree to the stipulation?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Ms. Kears, call the vote.
Mr.
Sorry, I was on mute. Mr. Lubke?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Aye, Zabit. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And that's everything to you folks at Carrington. We might not see you for a year, but you will still be in our thoughts.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Next up are a review of quarterly reports, and first up is American Home Inspectors Institute. Mr. LaMountain, can you give us a brief introduction?
Yes, Dr. Mittman, this is for your review, for the committee's review of the quarterly report for American Home Inspector Training. And we have Ms. Bridget Mangan, who will be representing the institution, and I believe as long Ms. Nicole Andler is there as well.
Great. And Ms. Mangan or Amber, would you like to give us an opening statement?
This is Maury Baker. I'm the vice president and Nicole's boss. If I could give the opening statement, if you're comfortable with that.
I don't know. Should we vote on it? Go ahead, Mr. Baker.
All right. No, thank you for the time. So the American Home Inspectors Institute, it is a business that had been acquired last year. You may notice that the financials are for our full organization and not specified to Arizona specifically. And part of that is because when the acquisition was made, it was a carve out of a company that had been recently carved out through an acquisition of a larger entity. And so the financials weren't solidified to the point where we could pull easy data on, you know, per product, per state, et cetera. And so the financials that you have are for the larger entity. We're in the process right now of revamping and reconfiguring our accounting system so we can pull data with the level of detail that you want for future quarterly reports. But as the quarterly reports stand for the greater business, we are very healthy. It is a bounce back year for us, even in the midst of all of the COVID issues. Arizona typically, as kind of an anecdotal view of our home inspection business there, it always runs more efficiently and leaner because one of our lead instructors who's been with us the longest lives in Arizona, so travel expenses are less, inventory expenses are less because he takes care a lot of that directly. So our Arizona numbers are always better than the health of the larger organization, and I think you'll see that in future quarterly reports. But that's the overview I have, and certainly we're open to any questions. We have our corporate, our global controller on if there are any questions specifically about the financials.
Good morning.
Okay. Good. Questions? Mr. Lubke or Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, this is Mr. Lubke. Looking at what you've submitted to the state for this calendar year, it looks like you're projecting to be positive as a parent company by June, and $400,000 to the good by the end of September, and yet you're trending actually the opposite direction with the $250,000 loss. Where do you project both the Arizona school and the parent company to be by year end?
And good morning. This is Rasmus Vanderkolf. I'm the controller. Yes. So I'll take that one. If we're looking at the numbers we submitted for as of 9:30, so our actuals for the year to date was actually close to the $400,000 net income after tax, compared to our forecast of just over $250,000. So we're actually trending a little bit better or positive, more positive than what we were expecting at the beginning of the year.
All right.
Sorry.
That's good news. I'm not sure who submitted the numbers to the staff to the contrary, but
maybe they were. It sounds like they were.
Maybe get us an updated report for the staff to have on hand.
Sure, absolutely. We can do that. Yeah, and then to Maury's point earlier, I think for Q4 we are probably trending, you know, on top of that. And probably should end the year, you know, the actual profit year somewhere in the $500,000-$600,000 range, compared to maybe about $400,000 that we were projecting. So still a positive trend in Q4 as well.
And the other questions, Mr. Lukey or Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, let me ask you the financial statements that are titled Lifelong Learning.
Yeah.
Who's that? Is that the parent? And can you clarify that, please?
Yes, that is the ultimate parent company. So Envision is the company that is basically the parent of AHIT, and then LLH is the ultimate parent company of Envision as well.
Okay. So if I look at the parent, it has I think it's third quarter or maybe it's year to date. Loss of $12.5 million. Do I read that right?
I'm sorry, are you looking at LLH?
LLH, yes. Sorry.
I am just trying to see which one. Is that on the 930 report? Because I.
Well, I think so. It's labeled third quarter 20.
I think the, because I had a similar question, is that year to date or is that just for the quarter? Because I also saw a loss of $39 million.
Well, that's,
sorry, one sec. I know which one you're looking at. Let me just open that real quick.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yes, correct. So the loss, the $12 million loss is, that is for the quarter, and a $39 million loss, and sorry, that is actually 2019 numbers, right? So if you look at 2020, the quarterly loss for Q3 was 6.8 million and 39 million for year to date. Just happens to be the same number year to date for last year and this year. So maybe I can give a little bit of background on LLH. So LLH, the parent company, we were private equity owned entity. Our annual revenues are roughly about $270 million per year. And then if you look at financials here, these are obviously, so say, GAAP financials. So this includes all our interest expense, all our amortization of goodwill, which we amortize, etc. So that's why we end up with the loss on a GAAP basis. But on a non-GAAP basis, when you add back all of our non-cash items, our interest payments and so forth, we're actually quite profitable. So it's just your typical private equity model that looks like this in the parent company financial statements, basically.
Yeah, I do see a lot of non-cash expenses, depreciation and amortization, and transition expenses pretty significant
at 5:00.
So,
right. Yeah.
Are those cash expenses or what might those be?
On the transition expenses?
Yes, sir.
Those would mostly be cash expenses at the end of the day. We're a very highly acquisitive company, and we have done we made three large acquisitions, including Envision, in the last year and a half. So there's, considerable integration expenses and transition expenses still coming through.
Okay. Any other questions, either Mr. Lukey or Mr. Ball?
Not for me.
Not for me.
Okay. Well, I'm good. All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen from American Home Inspectors and from Lifelong Learning. We appreciate your lifelong learning commitment and wish you the best for the holidays and a healthy 2021.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and the committee as well. Thank you.
All right. Next up, Arizona Automotive Institute. And Mr. LaMountain, do you want to give us a brief introduction, please?
Yes, Dr. Mittman, members of the committee, for your review today is the quarterly reports for Arizona Automotive Institute. During staff's review of the 2020 license renewal, the financial statements show a net loss for two consecutive years. Accordingly, the renewal was referred to the finance committee for your review. And representing the institution, you'll see on the list is, I'm not sure exactly who is going to pop up first and who wants to talk, so.
Great. Well, feel free to give us an opening statement.
Yes, sir. We currently have Daylon Childress, Vice President of Operations, and Craig Hugh representing both Arizona Automotive Institute and Ancora Education on today's call to speak into current state and the financials you would review or any future state operations or financials we're available to speak to.
Okay, questions, Mr. Lupi or Mr. Wall? I guess I can start. You're projecting a loss of about $6.5 million. For this year, and looks like you're about 1,000 students shy. Can you give us a sense of where you still feel that you're on track for that, or you know what your plans are to turn that around? I know that I guess for the first three quarters you have about a $4.5 million loss on $115 million. Of revenue.
Yes. Yes, this is Craig Hookey. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. So you are correct that through three quarters, the parent company Ancora has shown a loss of $4.6 million. We did, though, show income in the quarter of almost $900,000. We actually are projecting to have another profitable quarter in Q4 and end the year with a loss somewhere in the range of say $3 to $3.5 million. So we feel like at that corporate level, the student population which did go down during the COVID closure of some of the campuses, the impact of that has pretty much resolved itself. We are now seeing growth at most of the campuses that we operate, including Automotive Institute. So we're actually very optimistic about the fourth quarter of this year and into 2021.
Okay. And I remember from one of the previous meetings that, you know, this is a very hands-on program. And so are you able to safely get your students back into the learning laboratory facilities?
Yes, sir. And to piggyback Craig's insight, just to project in March, right as we were transitioning to the COVID environment, the campus population was roughly, you know, mid 200s, 260, and we project to finish end of year over 300. So the confidence that we have of just regaining not only profitability, but our student census is strong. To answer your question, sir, the campus has been effective at being able to balance the lecture lab components of the curriculum. And with some of the restructuring that's happening in key leadership positions at the campus, have confidence that both the student experience as well as the student population will continue to be positive.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Wallet, Mr. Lupke?
Yes, Dr. Mittman, I do have a couple of questions. I'm not sure which of the three representatives would like to tackle this one, but can you give the committee an idea of whether or not you're on cash reporting with the Department of Ed?
Shannon, do you know that?
Yes, actually, hello everyone. I'm Shannon Manzella. I'm the Manager of Regulatory Operations. We are on HCM1 reporting for that campus currently, and that is due to actually an acquisition that was in 2018.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And Shannon or Craig, would either one of you be able to answer the question, where is your composite ratio presently, and where do you project it to be by year end?
The composite score for 19, I believe, was about 1.6. I'd need to look that up specifically. And then we expect that to be in the range of 1.55 or so at the end of this year. So we've been monitoring certainly where the results of operations will be coming out, where we think that composite score will end. But I think it will be in that 1.55 range.
Okay. You must have a strong cash position.
We do. One thing that you may see on the balance sheet for Ancora, the holding company, there was a cash balance that was sufficient to run the company. There was also some restricted cash and letters of credit that have since been released, which actually enhanced the cash position by quite a bit more. Yes.
All right. Very good. Dr. Mibben, those are the only questions I have. You're on mute, sir.
I don't have any questions. I think all the relevant material has been presented to me.
Okay. Well, thanks. I was on mute to spare you guys from the crunching sound of the corn chips. So I have a couple of questions. This is a follow-up to Mr. Loopy's question. The letter of credit, was that the Education Department letter for $20 million, so that's been released?
Yes, the specific one, I think there were several, but one for $16 million, a little over $16 million, that was the one that was released.
Okay. And then, you know, a question again, you know, maybe for the benefit of some of the other schools who are still on the call. If I remember correctly, I think that you guys did like a $9 million consulting contract with, I don't know if it was McKinsey or one of the big consulting firms. Is that right?
No, I don't believe so. I'm relatively new with the company, but no, I don't know that one.
You would remember that, or somebody would have told you that?
I definitely think I'd remember that one.
Right. You know,
that was UTI.
Okay. Always interested, like it was similar to, you know, the conversation that we had with Arizona Heart Foundation. And, you know, for a lot of schools, you know, the kind of, you know, sometimes, you know, the benefits for, you know, some of these resources or consulting opportunities, I mean, very few would have the resources to do a $9 million. On the other hand, you know, the conversation that I was had earlier with Arizona Heart Foundation, you know, is you know, could be much, much less. And so I just wanted to touch base on that. And so obviously we'll have to wait for another meeting to have that conversation with somebody else. But okay. Well, great. Anything else, folks from AAI?
No, sir. Not
nope.
All right. Well, I don't have any questions, any other questions. So, you know, be well, be safe, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Doak. I'm in a school of integrated studies. Mr. LaMountain, lead us off.
Yes, Dr. Mittman and members of the committee. Before the committee today is a review of the quarterly reports for Arizona School of Integrated Studies. They have four campuses in Arizona. We are currently under a stipulated agreement that was signed on 10-5 of 2020. And I will tell you that they have met all the requirements and conditions of that stipulated agreement. I will also tell you that they have been, from my perspective, very, very good at communicating and anything that's going on with the institution. So from a staff perspective, I just wanted to send out an appreciation to the school for doing what they're doing. So that's it. Thank you.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much. And representing the institution, Ms. Yurkic, Archambault, or Todd, would you guys like to?
Yep. Yeah, all three are actually on the call currently. A quick update in regards to organization, Mr. Shannon Yurkic, Chief Executive Officer. Currently, from a financial position, our operating accounts, we've been able to improve our reserve and our current operating accounts to over $750,000. A lot of that has to do also with finally receiving the funds back from the Department of Education with the closure of the previous East Coast locations, FLSM and CMSM that we had. The letter of credit reduction yielded a refund back to our organization at approximately $602,000. Earlier this year, as noted previous calls, we did receive PPP funding in the amount of about approximately $187,600. We are currently in the process of completing the formal documentation to start the forgiveness process on that. In regards to our quarterly reporting for ASIS, out of the third quarter this year, we showed a $250K profit. Currently in the fourth quarter, we are currently approximately around $325K in profit. The surety bond that from the previous meeting was increased. We did secure it and provide documentation back supporting it. We also on October 9th provided our file upload of our students to the Arizona board, and we'll have another update that will occur by the year's end. Previous calls, we indicated we did receive a 7-year approval accreditation through CompTIA. We also received a distance application approval allowing us to transition and allow our students to stay online for remote learning when necessary as we work both on-ground courses and online courses, and that approval allows us to extend and provide that same level of flexibility for our students into 2021 and beyond. And finally, the litigation that had previously been open against the former owners, Merwin and Robinson, has concluded and been resolved. And counsel, while on this call today, did provide me a note that I'll be sending into Mr. Lamont, notifying him of the current statuses. But neither owner nor the litigation is ongoing any longer, and it has been resolved.
I'll say mazel tov to all of that, especially the litigation. I remember that was particularly messy. Mr. Wallace or Mr. Lubke, questions?
Dr. Mibben, having reviewed everything, I don't see anything to comment on. It seems rather complete. Glad I also echo your remarks. I'm glad to see the litigation behind them.
Is the outcome of that litigation reflected in the financial statements?
I would assume most likely not, because litigation as of just a few days ago finalized more with Mr. Merwin. Mr. Merwin is handling a personal matter, I believe, as you'll see with the letter. But from our counsel, the Mr. Robinson would be reflective because that has actually been completed about approximately 90 days ago. And the Merwin is just a new occurrence that was more finalized and where I got written documentation back from counsel. So I wouldn't expect that to be reflective of all the quarterly reporting. Though I don't see how it would dramatically change the positions that we're providing in the statements provided to you, outside of just the organization obtaining back his ownership shares, and neither one of them have any association with our ownership group or the entities.
So there's not a material impact on your statement of income?
That's correct.
Okay. So the net increase in revenue of $250,000 is on $1.5 million of revenue. Does that include the release of the letter of credit, or is that purely from operations?
I believe it's purely operational. However, Damian, I'll let you answer that for accuracy.
It does not include the letter of credit, as we only received those funds within the last couple of weeks back.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Good. If I could share my screen, which I'm not going to because that would probably mess things up, I wrote down in bold, nice, on my notes. So, you know, it is nice to see the changes, you know, the new ownership and the new leadership on the career kick. I assume that's you.
It's more my staff, but I got a great staff, so I got to give a lot of accolades and praise to the team, especially under COVID, flexibility and all the progression. So I would more divert the accolades to my team and my staff.
Okay. Well, I hope they're on the call so that they heard you say that. Without any other questions, let's move on. Thanks a lot. Be well, be healthy, and see you guys next time.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next up, Brighton College, Trilla Mountain.
Dr. Mootman, members of the committee, before the committee today is a review of the quarterly reports for Brighton College. Brighton has been on reporting since 2016. During the time, Brighton College has undergone significant changes and a change of ownership. Many, many challenges that we've all been aware of through the accrediting agency. And on September 30th, which was just a few days after our last report committee, finance committee, Brighton College notified us that they voluntarily withdrew their DEAC accreditation. DEAC has acknowledged the withdrawal of on October 1st of 2020. Their license has subsequently been changed from an accredited VOC and degree license to a non-accredited vocational program. And representing the institution today is Sean Dixon and Paul Zagnoni.
Okay, gentlemen.
Hello, board. I will happily make a statement for you. I'll start speaking towards the voluntary withdrawal from accreditation of the EAC. The accreditation, Kevin, actually took place on October 31st. That is the official end date of the accreditation with the EAC. We have not heard from the EAC since the withdrawal. We did, however, abide by all the proper notifications set forth by DEAC regarding the voluntary withdrawal process. In regards to our student population, we prepared ourselves ahead of time, which made the transition more seamless for our students. We additionally prompted our partners, and while their focuses are on the COVID-19 trends for their students, they were unfazed by the decision and wished to continue the partnership. In December of 2019, Brighton College met with the board and notified them that we would be making positive changes that would not only reflect our financials in a positive way, but would also ensure continued student success. 1 year later, with these changes in full effect and the board monitoring the financials, we have maintained a profit throughout 2020. With this, it has allowed Brighton College the ability to reduce debt. At the beginning of 2020, Brighton College had approximately $118,000 in vendor debt, with $68,000 being LearnKey, which is a 50% owner of Brighton College. We have currently paid down approximately $102,000 towards the debt, with a current balance of $80,000. Of this $80,000 balance, $52,000 is LearnKey. This does also include reoccurring invoices that we have received from some of these vendors as well. So that's why the math doesn't add up fully. But we have made those payments towards those vendors, and it's helped a lot. We did receive PPP funding in the amount of $108,000. We have currently submitted the forgiveness application and are currently awaiting a response on that.
Okay, great. Mr. Lukey or Mr. Wallace? Questions for Brighton?
I have no questions, Dr. Mittman.
Okay. Mr. Wallace?
I don't have any questions.
I'm just looking at my notes. You two got a nice, like, I guess maybe some people are waiting to see if there's a naughty on my, in my notes. I don't see any. You know, obviously the increase in profitability, is good. Your enrollment exceeds your break even. So, once again, change of, you know, the changes that you've implemented in the last year seem to be, paying off. So thank you very much.
Very.
And, best wishes, safe, be healthy, and we'll see you next quarter.
Absolutely. Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you. Bye bye. Next up, Butcher Pilates. Ms. Mendoza.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm
going out of order. Mr. LaMountain, do you want to make some introductory remarks before we turn it over?
Absolutely. Dr. Mittman, members of the Finance Committee, before the board today is a review of the quarterly reports for Fletcher Pilates. During the June 25th, 2020 Finance Committee meeting, the committee approved the renewal of the 2020 regular vocational program license with the following stipulations: that they maintain the $25,000 surety bond, that they continue quarterly reporting. Fletcher has complied with that. And then again, representing the institution is Ms. Mendoza.
Hi. Now, Ms. Mendoza, over to you.
Yes. Hi. So we are basically where we thought we would be at this point. So yes, this year has been a challenge with COVID, but we have been able to stay at least on track to get our programs that were running when this all started and get those students through the process. We also, in terms of kind of aspects that are not related to the school program, but our continuing education programs that we do run, which do represent a big chunk of our income, have been able to switch those over into an online format. In our financial statements that you see, we're just at the point that those have basically been rolling out, so that you're not seeing any income coming in yet for those in our financial statements yet. But looking a little bit in the fourth quarter and then going into the new year, we're looking at that to be able to balance it out in terms of our main Arizona program that we run, our main comprehensive program. Like I said, we have been able to keep the students that were in process utilizing online situations, and we are looking at our programs being able to continue next year, again, with some of the new kind of teaching methods of working online that we've been able to do. And so that looks like we're going to be on track, at least to be able to continue. So.
Thank you. Mr. Lucy, Mr. Wallace.
Well, I commend you. I commend you on staying creative and finding new and maybe even more sustainable ways to expand your business going forward. I don't have any questions regarding your financials at this time.
Okay.
I have a question with regard to your statement of income, and it's the other income and expense. It's item 15. It's a big number there. Are those recurring costs, or are those what might be in there? It's $41,000 through the 9 months
ended September 2020. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear what you were specifically asking about. I couldn't quite hear you.
I think I had the same question. I think that there is an other expense of $41,000. Is that what you're referring to, Mr. Wallace?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and could you just explain, it's on the expenses for your income statement, and, you know, everything else is itemized, but then there's other expense, and it's a pretty big chunk.
Um, Sorry, which form are you looking at? If you can be.
Sure. So your financial statements, the second one should be your either profit and loss or income statement would be the title. And then under expenses, there's an other expense, and it's $41,000. And so I think Mr. Wallace's question, because I had the same question, was, well, what's the $41,000?
So I believe because of how the forms show up is all of our expenses related to our continuing education courses that we run, because they're not the programs that are licensed by you, end up falling in those other expenses. So other expenses related to running some of those continuing education courses and those types of things, and some of the work that we've done related to transferring those to that online format are showing up there.
Mr. Wallace, did that answer sufficiently for you?
Yeah, that does answer it. Just from my perspective, I would encourage you to those seem to be part of your normal operations. If you're saying continuing education and transitioning and so forth, those are typically should be above that line. That's just my recommendation.
Okay.
Take it from a CPA, Mr. Wallace. I have another question. A lot of the unearned income is your, I think what you're also referring to is your non-licensed services.
Correct.
I don't have it in front of me, but students, looks like students all over the world. Mm-hmm. There's roughly $144,000 there, mm-hmm. which shows up as a current liability on your balance sheet. And so when are these courses being offered, and when will they be completed?
Yes, there's one of those that will cross over into first quarter of next year. The others will be actually finishing up during this quarter, this fourth quarter.
Okay. And then you noted $27,565 of PPP loan funds. Have you submitted for forgiveness, and where is that?
We have submitted for forgiveness, fingers crossed, but anticipating that will be forgiven. We haven't received anything back yet or information back yet, but we have submitted that.
Okay. And I'm just wondering, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm assuming that your current loss of $44,643 would benefit from the loan because it would show up then as revenue. Is that right?
Yes, that would be the hope.
Okay. Well, good. Okay. Any other questions? Either Mr. Lupke or Mr. Wallace?
I don't have any more.
No, I don't either.
All right.
Okay.
Well, best of health and wellness to you, Ms. Mendoza, in the holiday season, and best wishes for a good 2021. We all deserve that. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Next up, we have Jackie Fisher for Images Enterprises, who, based on the information I have, I don't think we have a trophy this meeting, but we do. Looks like good news again from the Silver Mountain. Can you read us off?
Sure. Dr. Mittman, members of the committee. Before the committee today is a review of the for Images Enterprises LLC. At the April 22nd, 2020 board meeting, the board approved the 2020 regular vocational program licenses with the following stipulations: maintaining the $30,459 surety bond, continuing the quarterly reporting, and the immigrants has met the requirements of the stipulation, and then representing the institution today is Ms. Jackie Fisher.
Ms. Fisher, do you want to give us an introductory?
Sure. So we did submit, we did get a small amount from the PPP, and we have submitted our forgiveness, and we're just awaiting. Chase's website says it could take up to 3 months. So we're just waiting the approval on that. We expect that it'll be fine. And let's see, as of today, once I get back to the Tucson campus, I'll be able to invoice for a couple of students that have enrolled, which means we have met our goal of our projected amount that we submitted earlier this year. So super happy about that. We do have money in savings now, finally. Thank you. And truck driving has dropped down, so you'll see other income drop down last quarter, which is the third quarter and the fourth quarter, but this is when my accounting and my permanent make is very, very busy. So that being said, we have taken on 3 permanent makeup teacher apprentices. Some of them came from the schools here locally in Chandler, and 2 of them are RNs. I'm super excited about that. So those are going to be other programs because they're paramedical programs for permanent cosmetics and skin. But I'm happy with that. So the apprentice program typically take about a year to properly train a person to be an instructor in this kind of industry in permanent cosmetics. This is very detailed. But we start that apprenticeship program in January. And that's about it. So just working 7 days a week, like usual.
Well, thank you. And you wrote a letter and it referenced a narrative. I didn't see the narrative part. Was that what you just gave us kind of an update on?
Pretty much, yeah, about the PPP funding. And yes, the CDL program's down. It used to be 60%, it's now 42%. However, my accounting and permanent makeup more than compensate for that.
Okay. Great. And before I turn it over to Taylor Mountain, are there any new program applications that Ms. Fisher needs to make, or is that all?
We were going to submit our logistics program. Previously, we had it in our notes and stuff. What Mike's my son, he's online also. What him and I decided to do is to put more resources and attention into the programs that we are having. We're already, even before the COVID, everything was online and blended anyway. So we haven't really had an effect from the COVID. So we've decided to put the new programs off for now and just concentrate on what we have until we see what our future is going to be.
Whoever else is like making the monster noises, if you could mute yourself. Mr. Luke or Mr. Wallace, questions?
Yes, I have a question. This is comparable to the one I asked the last party, and that is, on your income statement, other income expense, you have additional income that's done before, apparently, but it's $57,000 year to date. What would be included in that would be part of operations?
Okay, I'm not hearing you well. So you said your question was on other income and expenses?
Yes, other income and expense, that's line 15 or?
Gotcha. So what we do is a lot of permanent makeup, and the permanent makeup courses are approved by the post-secondary if you haven't had any prior experience. Then you continue on with like microblading. That's other income because it's continuing education. And then you may continue on with paramedical, which is areola scar camouflage and things like that, which is also permanent makeup, but it's like continuing education. So a lot of it's that. Also on that line, though, is truck driving. Truck driving does, in the other quarters, typically your first two quarters of every year of history, truck driving is as high as 60% of our revenue, and that's other income and expenses.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it seems like continuing education is what you do also part of your business.
We're primarily continuing education, even on some of the programs. For instance, I have probably four students in permanent makeup. They're licensed cosmetologists or medical skin estheticians. Technically, it's continuing education. But I kind of still run them through the Board of Education through you guys because I just think it looks cleaner. And I just think it looks cleaner, honestly. So primarily what we do is continuing education. Even our construction, we recruit people out of companies. So they already have a job doing what they're doing. They just want to maybe become a licensed spray technician. So they would come to our school to get that state prep and exam, and then they can go back to their employer and they can get an increase in wage or whatever. So yeah, we're primarily a continuing education facility.
So those costs of delivering that continuing education are in operating expenses somewhere.
Yes,
okay. Uh-huh. All right. I'm just wondering, Mr. Wallace, do you see, would it be to Image's advantage to adjust some of the ways that they're reporting this, or are there opportunities maybe either for grants or other things that may be beneficial if they were to make some of the modifications?
I would recommend that the other income and expense, assuming that's all revenues and so forth, be included in the educational revenues. Maybe perhaps a separate line if that's appropriate. The reason being is if you look at your educational income, it shows you're running at a loss and delivering your programs. And I'm not sure that's a true statement. I think you are profitable in delivering educational programs, but maybe you can tell me otherwise.
Right, and I think the, you know, another, in contrast to your case, Ms. Fisher, we have had other schools, I can't remember off the top of my head, who, you know, they're doing instruction, whether it's, you know, for a certificate or a degree or for continuing ed, but then they're also providing other services. So it could be, let's say, a construction school that either does construction or does construction consulting. And so that would be other income that, in contrast to what you're doing, you know, I think would fit, you know, better for Mr. Wallace. But that's truly other income. In your case, since it's all educational, you are kind of underrepresenting the performance of
well, it's not all educational. I do services as well.
Okay.
So I'll do the permanent makeup procedures myself. I'll do the cosmetology myself.
Right. So those belong, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ross, those would belong in
another
income. But anything that has to do with teaching, whether it was, you know, within the purview of private post-secondary or it's what you were calling continuing education, it would be better for you to show that as, you know, some kind of educational revenue. Because whether it's you know, going for a loan or, you know, renewing your line of credit or whatever it is, it shows that you are operating more effectively and efficiently than I think it would the way you're stating your finances today.
So on this Excel sheet of your form, would you like it where it says educational revenues? Would you like to put like CDL program in there or something like that so you know it's separate or up in that area? Because that's other. So where would you like me to put the other income? Just add a line and it's CDL and it's continuing education programs? That way this bottom line where it says educational income does not show a loss?
That would be my preference. My preference is that whenever you show an educational revenues, okay, you have the expenses that match against that and operating expenses. And if you want to put in other income, you know, your application of permanent makeup to a client, you know, that's fine. That's a little bit different.
Okay.
Let's consider for now.
Okay, very good.
So I'll just insert a line there for you, right? Like in number four up there in educational revenues. And that's what will have my other income, my other revenues of teaching, correct?
We're just on the Skirkland Speedway at 70.
Yeah. I think why don't you try that and we'll see. We'll see how it looks next quarter.
Okay.
And thank you very much, Mr. Wallace. I think, hopefully with images, continued performance, as you have opportunities to grow, maybe this would be something that would be beneficial, as you're seeking more resources. Mr. Lupke, any questions for Ms. Fisher?
Need a Hopi. What are they called? Jeez, is it Hopi salad?
Mm-hmm. Hopi. I think Mr. Lukey is unmuted, which is the opposite of most of us. We get tagged for being muted, but I think he's ordering lunch. And so, why don't we? I think I'm fine, and we wish you the best, Ms. Fisher, and you and your son and images. And look forward to seeing you next quarter. Have happy holidays.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Okay. Next up, Southeastern University. And we have this in the reviews, but I'm not sure it says license renewal. So I just want to clarify that. Why don't you lead us off, Mr. LaMountain, if you could clarify that as well.
Yeah, I apologize. It is not for a license renewal. This is just for a review.
Okay, good, because I was not prepared.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman and members of the committee. Before the committee today is a review of the quarterly reports for Southeastern University. At the September 22nd, 2020 Finance Committee meeting, the Finance Committee approved the regular degree granting license with the following stipulations: that a bond of $19,050 be posted and that they submit to quarterly reporting. As of this time, we do not have the bond in yet, although I have received communication earlier today from Ms. Murphy that stated that they do have the bond, and it will be on its way to us shortly. So, and that's the report. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay. From Southeastern, you guys in Florida now? Is that where you are?
We are in Florida, yes, and it's chilly here for us.
Okay. Well, it was raining here in Arizona. So,
Yeah. We've submitted the financial reports, and one of the things that we wish we would have had before you is our audit, our final audit for 2019 and 20. We had planned to have that sometime in around this time, but regrettably, we lost our managing partner for the auditing firm. Actually, she died suddenly. She was murdered, which was a shock to our community. And so we are working through that process, but we will have the actual audited numbers to you probably by mid-January. But what we've reported is what we believe the audit is going to show, and that is that we've reported our a significant improvement for fiscal year 20 versus 19. And also we appear to be on track this year for both the Arizona location and for our overall organization to meet our objectives for the current year. So anyway, that's what I have to report at this point, and I'm open to any questions.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry for your community's loss. And Mr. Lukey, Mr. Wallace, any questions?
I was wondering if Mr. Spear could just give us some kind of idea how he finishes, how the year will finish this year.
Yeah, thank you. Our target this year is for a $1 million operating surplus. Then added to that would be whatever comes in for what we call restricted items like endowment giving and that kind of thing. But our budget is primarily focused on operations. So that is what our target is for this year. I will say to you that we have a great deal of confidence for our second semester. But the reason why I continue to endorse a quarterly monitoring process here is because I want to ensure that we do deliver that second semester as expected or as promised. So that is our plan for this year, is to deliver a $1 million operating surplus.
All right. And that is that an adjusted projection? I'm just curious, with all that's gone on in 2020, were you hoping for more, or is that?
We were, yes, that is correct. Last year we had a $3 million surplus for the organization, and actually that was after taking a $2.5 million charge for an interest rate swap that went the wrong way. So that was a non-cash hit for us.
Right.
So we did very well last year, but this year, based upon what's happened, we see revenues have gone down from last year, and we have made a number of expense adjustments, but we feel like we have turned the corner here as an institution. It's just that COVID is one of those things where I wish I could tell you that I have all manner of certainty about how the year is going to wind up. I'm really kind of waiting to see what the second semester brings for us to ensure that we can deliver what we believe we can do.
So you're waiting like the rest of the world is.
That's right.
All right. I have no other questions, Dr. Mittman.
Thanks. Mr. Wallace?
No, I don't have any questions. I do see what that interest rate swap did to your financials for year end in May 2020. So maybe that's behind you. Hopefully, it is behind you at this juncture. So anyway, I'm good.
It changes every year. You either live by it or you pay for it. I noticed that I think you have a couple more years on that agreement. It was a 12-year agreement going back to 2011 or something like that.
That is correct. There are two tranches of swaps. One is 2023, and the other is 2025. And we're actually working on looking at a refinancing that may actually reduce our exposure to those swaps, but we don't have any report on that just yet.
Okay. I don't know, you know, either Mr. Lukey or Mr. Wallace, if you have an opinion on that, but we had that for one of our master trust indentures from a bond issuance, and just hated it. And so when we I don't think it was a refinance, but when we, you know, had a new municipal bond issued, we stayed away from the interest rate swap. And so
yeah,
it always seemed like it was kind of a shot, you know, a shot in the dark. We never knew where it was going to, how it was going to affect our financial statements.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's a bet, and I've seen where people have come out successful on them. But interest rates are so low now, it's not surprising.
Yeah. Right. So when interest rates are low, that's when it adversely affects the institution, right? So it's sort of
right.
like...
Right.
If they drop. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I guess ideally then you're saying, Mr. Wallace, that if you were to embark on some kind of credit facility with an interest rate swap today, this would be the day to do it because interest rates can't get any lower. Is that right?
I don't know about can't get any lower. I've been surprised. But you're generally speaking, you're on the right track.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Well, thanks. And it looked like you got a big donation this past year also. So congratulations.
We did. Yes. Yes, we did. We're grateful. We're working on some more.
All right. Well, good. We'll have a wonderful holidays and wish you the best of health and prosperity in the next year.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, talent. Ciao. Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman, members of the committee, before the board today is the review of the quarterly reports for Tech Talent South. If you recall, during the previous October board meeting, the board approved the conditional to regular vocational program license with the following stipulations, that they secure an Arizona location by October 31st, that they maintain the $25,560 surety bond, they continue quarterly reporting. We did receive, if you recall during that conversation, we were trying to determine whether or not, one, they had an Arizona presence or if they needed an Arizona presence, but they have since then secured on or before that October 31st deadline a location at 1 North 1st Street. And representing the institution is Susan Feast, Beth Kobach, and John Rule.
Hey, everyone. My name is John Rule. I am the finance manager here. I am sad to report that Suzanne Spies has moved on to a new opportunity. We miss her dearly, but you're going to be stuck with me moving forward. And I believe Beth is on the phone as well. Doesn't really matter if she is or isn't, but I'm happy to give a little Q3 overview and answer any questions you may have. So I think that Suzanne may have briefly mentioned this in our previous regulatory call, but our Q3 was really focused on kind of a boon to our business in the second half of the year, which is these workforce development programs that have kind of arose out of a lot of what's going on in the world with respect to the pandemic and CARES Act funding for different municipalities. To date, we have cultivated about, I think the number is up to 6 programs with different municipalities across the United States, running programs for them to provide services for individuals in their communities that are affected negatively by COVID. We're certainly happy with the financial impact that has had on our business in the second half of the year, but even more so happy with kind of the community impact of those programs. I will say, though, that while the efforts to create those relationships happened in Q3, most of the programs have begun within Q4, so the financial impact won't be recognized this time around. That to say, we posted a loss in Q3. Looking at a much better Q4 move and, feeling great about our momentum going into the new year. And then last piece I'll touch on, Mr. Wallace, I believe, asked about this in the past, just in terms of some of the non-cash expenses that make up the majority of that Q3 loss. We are doing an extensive overview of some of our aged accounts receivable. So doing our best to clean that up. It's just kind of a long going process, but the vast majority of the Q3 losses is non-cash associated directly with those efforts. So, that's just the last little supplemental piece I'll mention about the quarter.
Okay. So since you referenced Mr. Wallace, you should by now know that Mr. Luebke is going to ask you where you expect to end the year after the quarter.
Yeah, I started to take notes on Q4, where we are with cash, and where we are with the PPP loan. So happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Luebke. That's the question.
Well, you got me there, Dr. Mitman. So just comparing the last report that you sent into the staff, it looks like you've eaten through quite a bit of cash. Do you expect to get that back by year end, or do you think you're going to pretty much just be in a holding pattern there?
Happy to report we have gotten it back. Our cash position is north of 400K now, which is a great improvement. We had a lot of receipts tied up in just some slower moving partners, but yeah, we're in a much healthier cash position as we end the year.
Good. All right. So I don't have any other questions, Dr. Mitman.
Okay. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Mr. Long, are there questions for Mr. Rule?
I don't have any questions. It's very clear to me.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Rule, and best wishes on a good holiday season, good start to 21. And to Beth, good luck dealing just with Mr. Rule instead of having to sit down. So he seems like a good person.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy holidays to all you as well.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, next up, Webster University, all the way from Missouri, I believe, and here at Luke Air Force Base. Mr. LaMountain, you want to give us a lead-in?
Certainly. Dr. Mitman, members of the committee, before the committee today is a review of the quarterly reports for Webster University at Luke Air Force Base campus. At the April 23rd, 2020 board meeting, the board approved the 2020 regular degree granting license with the following stipulations: that they maintain the $55,166 surety bond and that they continue to the quarterly reporting, and those obligations have been met. Representing the institution today is Ms. Maggie Lauer and Ms. Teresa Barnes.
Okay. Welcome, Ms. Lauer and Ms. Barnes. Do you want to give us some introductory remarks?
Hi, this is Maggie. Actually, I don't think Ms. Barnes will be here today, but we do have Ben Brink on, and he's our AVP for the military segment. So, Ben, you want to give a couple comments?
Yeah, just to introduce myself, the 30 military campuses report to me, and my director of support, Felice Morrell, is also here with me. So, I think most of the questions are financial. I'm available for questions if you have any.
Okay. I think the main question that I have before I turn over to my colleagues is it seemed like you were very, there wasn't a whole lot of campus activity going on at the Luke Air Force Base campus. Is that right, or has it changed?
So I apologize. I just lost connection as you started speaking, having had perfect connection while everyone else reported. Would you mind repeating your
thought? For some reason, I remember the last time that there was, because of the pandemic, you guys had really dialed things way down here.
So this is pretty typical across all of our campuses. The military commands, we only have a handful of campuses where we have ground classes right now. The students that we have have shifted either to synchronous online, most that way, and are receiving their classes via Zoom, or to asynchronous online. We are beginning to see movement in the military commands for reopening either for our spring 2 or summer terms.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Luebke, I think you have your hand up.
Do I really? Well, let me take it down.
I'm impressed. I'm trying to think. I'm happy to just stay connected and muting myself, unmuting myself, and here you you have like advanced Google whatever we're on capability.
Right, right. Well, very good. I guess my main question is just again forecasting as in terms of both what things will look like by year end, and then what you're thinking the first quarter of next year will look like.
So I'll leave it to Maggie to talk about the financials, but just generally, COVID-19 has made it very hard to understand what's going to happen post COVID-19. Clearly, during the pandemic, we've seen among our military campuses significant shift to online modalities. Webster's performed pretty well at that. We had a lot, both synchronous and asynchronous online presence for quite a while, and our implementation of Zoom has helped that. But we don't know whether the world's going to go back to the way it was after COVID-19. I think that we'll see a continuation of a larger percentage of our students preferring online modalities, although I wouldn't even venture a guess for you as to what that percentage will be once they have access to the physical campus again.
Are you, can you tell us a little bit about what the effect of COVID has been on total revenue for the year? Most schools are reporting somewhere between 15 to 25% down from what they expected.
So I am going to leave that to Maggie, because Maggie is our controller, and I'll let her do the financial numbers.
All right. You're on, Maggie.
Okay, so we definitely had the opportunity to reset our expectations at the beginning of, before our fiscal year ended, knowing that COVID was upon us and happening. So it was, we reset our budget and our expectations early in March and April, but at that point in time, still did not know what the full impact would be on our tuition revenues. As Ben has mentioned, we've had a pretty seamless transition to online experience for some of our students. We return in person in some locations for some types of classes this fall. So tuition is down, but not down as much as it could have been. Our housing costs have been cut pretty much, I would say, about in half, because we chose to single up our dorms so that we would have reduced density and still have students able to come on the campus to live in the residential halls. So our costs, our revenues are down, but we continue to see the growth in some of our emerging locations overseas, as we've talked about in the past. And so our campus that we started 2 years ago in Uzbekistan is now our largest campus in the world, and we expect it to grow 50% next year. So we definitely have lots of high growth opportunities. Online segment continues to be a growth engine for us. But like Ben says, where we know that students are just having some tough times right now deciding, do I want to go to school right now? Do I want to be online? Do I want to be in person? What's my risk for doing this? So we do anticipate that next year is going to be another rough year, but we're optimistic about some of our growth engines.
Well, that sounds great. So, Maggie, what would you guesstimate your revenue to be off by?
To be off by or down from this year?
Yes.
From fiscal 20, our operating revenues ended at 159. That was fueled by a $10 million gift that we received. So let's say our revenues that would be from regular operations would have been about $150 million. I think we'll be down maybe 7% year to year on our operating revenues if you include that large gift. And then I do think we might be able to get back up to that fiscal 20 level, maybe for fiscal 22. In the meantime, we're holding steady on costs. We've really, really reduced costs in the last several years. As you know, our revenues have declined, and we've had to reset our expense basis. there hasn't been any discretionary spending this fiscal year to date. So that's something I take pride in, that people are thinking responsibly as we're having to change our operations and do things virtually for our students, because we definitely want to still provide superior educational experience for our students.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, one simple question. When is your fiscal year end?
Our fiscal year ends May 31.
Okay, so when we see August statements, that's just the first quarter. So, got it.
It is.
Okay, I have no other questions.
Okay, well, I'm good.
Well, thank you very much, Maggie and Ben. Wish you again the best, good health, and I hope that things pick up in 2021 and you guys are able to fully fulfill your mission of Webster University here and around the world.
Thank you,
Dr. Mittman. Have a happy holiday.
You too. Bye-bye. And at last, the Wizard Education. You know, and I shouldn't say this because they'll be pissed off if I say this, but I thought, we should change the, we should go in reverse alphabetical order. Maybe Mr. LaMountain, remind me of that the next time so that we can actually go ahead and do that. I think about that periodically.
So I'll vote for that.
Okay, yeah. Mr. Wallace, okay. Mr. LaMountain?
Great. Dr. Mittman, members of the committee, before the committee today is a review of the quarterly reports for Wizard Medical Education. In April of 2020 board meeting, the State Board approved the 2020 regular vocational program license renewal with the following stipulations: that they maintain the $29,454 surety bond and that they continue quarterly reporting. The institution has completed with each of those requirements. Before you today, representing the institution is Carl Lind and Beth Wichman. Never get it right. And I will move them up to number one in the next finance committee. That is a promise.
Okay. All right. Wizard Education, you're number one. Next time. Ms. Wichman or Mr. Lind, get away. Not sure. Are you guys here, Carl or Beth?
Is Carl in yet? This is Beth.
Okay. No, Beth, it's all on you.
Oh, Carl. He's teaching, so he's trying to sign in or call in. So he's been teaching all morning.
Why don't we get started with any questions? I mean, I noticed, for year to date, you guys look like you're showing positive net revenue. And so why don't I turn it over to Mr. Wallace and Mr. Luke for any questions, and hopefully we'll go from there.
Okay.
I guess I'll start off. Beth, I noticed the third quarter showed a year-to-date loss of about $34,000. Can you give the committee an idea of where you'll end up at year end?
I'm not exactly sure about that. I know that we're holding our own, and we look forward to just finishing out the year at positive. So everybody's been paying their bills, and we've been invoicing a lot, so I think we're going to show up really good.
All right. I'm not sure what to ask you next.
Can I just ask, Mr. Lukey? I have for year to date a total, from an income statement of an increase in net assets of $118,911 on $560,000 of revenue. Do I have that right? I don't have the quarter three broken out in my notes.
Are you looking at the balance sheet then?
Hmm.
Can everybody hear me now?
Yeah.
This is Carl Lynn. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Oh, praise Jesus. I'm sorry.
We're going to hit either rewind, or we're going to do like on the podcast, we'll go back 30 seconds, another 30 seconds, and Mr. Lupke is going to ask the same question that he just asked Beth.
Okay, I apologize. I could hear you. I just was trying to unmute my phone, and it didn't seem to want to do that. So my sincere apologies.
No worries. No worries. Everyone's still learning how to navigate all this stuff. So
technology.
Yes. Yeah. You can live or die by it, I suppose. The numbers that you submitted to the staff show in the third quarter that there'll be a net loss of 34,000. And so we don't have anything really. We do have a projection that you gave us, and just maybe the more specific question is, do you still project to be positive by $181,669?
Okay. So you're looking on the report?
I am. It's the one that was submitted, looks like I'm sorry. It was submitted on 11/12 of this year, the 12th of November.
Is that on the financial report or?
Yes. It at the very top, it says financial report. It's
okay. So I'm seeing the third quarter. The third quarter. Okay. So I can probably cut right to the chase on that. We started our new cohort at the end of the third quarter of September, the September 21st, I believe, that we started our new paramedic program, and actually it was the only one that we have had this year because of COVID shutting down the hospitals and clinical time and that type of stuff. So we were not able to do our first cohort. And we actually postponed that cohort until September, which is real late. But we did get it up and going, and we've been receiving income, some full tuitions, but mostly like partial tuitions, you know, by trimester and that sort of thing. So as far as projections, which line were you looking at there?
Well, I kind of toggled over to what you gave us in terms of your P&L year to date.
Okay.
Do you have that in front of me? It looks like
I have our P&L here. Yes.
Yeah. So at the end of September, it looks like you were showing a net income of 88,000. So my only question is, do you still feel good that you'll be posting in the positive by year end?
You know what? I do, and I feel extremely positive about 2021 because, cutting to the chase, all along we've been trying to not only cut expenses and, you know, improve tuition, that type of stuff, but we've been looking diligently for expertise, for our school to, you know, not only help us keep it going, but also improve it. The beginning of November, we entered into a letter of agreement for an acquisition of our school, and basically the plan is to merge our school in with some existing schools in the state and also in other states that we found a buyer, basically, for lack of a better term, that has a lot of incredible resources that we feel can help our school excel. They've got an accounting staff that we've been talking with the last few weeks. That's incredible. Has a lot of good ideas for us. A marketing staff, that we're already working with to help us, you know, improve, our registrations and
some of our non-academic, non-vocational type programs and things. So we are set to do the deal, I guess, if you will, on January 4th of 2021. And at that point, they'll be taking over the operation of the school. Everything will pretty much stay the same as far as the members, the people that are, you know, running things right now, and all our teachers and staff and everything. There's really no plans to change any of that type of stuff. It's just mostly we've got some expertise now that's going to help us get where we need to be and to excel.
All right. Very good. Dr. Mimmon.
All right. Well, thank you. Mr. Wallace?
No, I don't have any questions. It's pretty well outlined in the financials what I needed to know.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you very much. I, too, am good. Thank you, Mr. Lin, Ms. Wickman, you know, we wish you the best and happy and a safe holiday season. Well, of all the schools, you guys have the most, you know, hear news from you in January. So look forward to it. And it's a long way to think. And I think we've reached the end of the meeting. I apologize for going over. I know the staff have a complaint committee coming up, and then we are back at 3 for the board meeting. So,
thank you, everybody.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Good holidays.
Yeah. Unless there's anything else, I will say that this, Mr. LaMountain, do we have anything else that we need to cover?
No, not at this time.
All right. Then this meeting. I was going to adjourn, but you guys are like...
I'll see you at 3.
I'm going to say take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.